Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, you would think that mainstream media members who trend to the left would have learned something from watching the debate Wednesday night, that when you go after Marco Rubio, you often get your lunch handed to you. But Charlie Rose from CBS This Morning didn't apparently learn that lesson. Maybe he went to bed too early because he's got to get up for the early show. But anyway, Marco Rubio was on the program. I believe this was actually on Thursday. Charlie Rose decided to bring up Benghazi when Marco Rubio said he was not going to attack any of his fellow presidential candidates.
I've never personally attacked anybody in this race, and I'm not going to start now. If other people decide they want to change who they are,
you called Hillary Clinton a liar, Senator. You called Hillary Clinton a liar.
Well, no, I said Hillary Clinton lied about Benghazi. There's no doubt about that, Charlie. I mean, there are emails in which she was talking to her family, and she was telling them that there was an attack on that consulate that was due to a terrorist attack by Al-Qaeda elements. And then she was going around the country talking to the families of the victims and to the American people and saying, no, no, this is because of some video that someone produced.
Senator,
that led to a spontaneous
uprising. That the CIA,
she absolutely
was changing,
lied about
the CIA was changing its own assessment of what happened there during that time zone.
That's not accurate. It was clear from the very early moments after that attack that it was not a spontaneous uprising. It was a planned attack, well orchestrated by people that brought armaments to that attack that you would never see as part of a spontaneous uprising. What was very clear is that from the very early moments of that attack, she knew that it was a terrorist attack, as she shared by email with various people. And yet she continued to perpetuate the lie.
If you're calling her a liar by saying she perpetuated a lie, then why do you think she did that? What was her motive?
Well, that's very clear why. Because they were in the middle of a 2012 re-election in which President Obama had made the claim that Al-Qaeda was being defeated and on the run. And this counteracted that narrative.
You were saying, Senator, that Hillary Clinton lied because she wanted to help Barack Obama in his re-election campaign. That's a serious charge.
Yes. Well, it's the truth.
So there you go. Jim, you can't sum it up much better than that.
Well, it's interesting about the plodding, slow, probing method of Charlie Rose in those questions. My colleague Jonah Goldberg is making this point that to most members of the mainstream media, Democrats are normal. They are the baseline. That is what a well-adjusted, healthy, psychologically, and everybody who disagrees with that is deviating from the baseline of normal. So when Marco Rubio says, he's like, you're calling her a liar. Yes, because she lied. You know, Rubio makes that point. Rubio doesn't think he's doing anything extraordinary because it really isn't that extraordinary, because we're not surprised to hear Hillary Clinton called a liar. In Charlie Rose's world, it's very unusual to call Hillary Clinton a liar. And then once you do that, his question you hear there, Greg, is, well, why would she do such a thing? She's so nice. She's so honest. Why would she say it's about a video instead of admitting that on September 11th, 2012, the 11-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, a major U.S. diplomatic post ambassador was left with egregiously little security in a dangerous part of the world after a botched half-led-from-behind invasion and toppling of a regime that was supposed to be the centerpiece of Hillary Clinton's – why would she lie about that, Marco? Really? To us, it's very obvious. We were 2 months away from election day. This was going to be an egregious major failure on the Obama administration's watch 2 months before people decided whether he should have a second term or not. And so it's much easier to say, look, it was this out of control protest. We had no warning. It's the fault of this filmmaker, than to say, yeah, we completely botched Libya from beginning to end. And so kudos to Marco Rubio. It was a great moment. And you could just kind of see the utter perplexed look on Charlie Rose's face with this. And the idea, what's kind of fascinating is to him, and I guess to some other corners of the mainstream media, the idea that Hillary Clinton lied about this and that she generally has a bad relationship with the truth and lies to get herself out of trouble, this is a strange, unusual, jaw-dropping concept to them. And I think it indicates they live in a very, sheltered little bubble that revolves a great deal of psychological denial.
Speaking of a horrible Middle East policy, let's move to the bad martini today. And this is the NBC version of the story that will develop more this afternoon. And by the time some of you hear this, the policy will be officially made public. The White House will announce Friday that a small number of U.S. Special Operations Forces will be sent into Syria. The senior U.S. official said the forces will be stationed in northern Syria and work alongside groups with a proven track record of fighting ISIS. The move will be described as a shift, but not a change in U.S. strategy against ISIS. The special ops forces could work with Kurdish and allied actors who have come together under the umbrella of the Syrian Democratic Forces, according to the official who spoke on anonymity. Mac Thornberry of Texas is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He said that it's pretty clear the White House was feeling the pressure of a failed policy against ISIS. Quote, I'm concerned that the administration is trying to put in place limited measures too late that are not going to make a difference. I don't see a strategy towards accomplishing a goal. I see an effort to run out the clock without disaster. And, Jim, I think that's the gut feeling of a lot of conservatives today, because obviously we want to destroy ISIS, but it's been clear over the past year plus that Obama is doing as little as possible to try and affect that. And when you start playing with human lives in this process, it makes you very uneasy.
You know, my colleague David French offers what is probably the most optimistic assessment of what we're seeing in Obama's foreign policy. He reminds us that in that last year under Jimmy Carter, President Carter took a slightly tougher, a slightly more rightward turn, a harder line with the Soviet Union. He really felt stung by the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And you started to see some movement in the direction that conservatives, hawks, everyone who characterized it, wanted to see. He began to recognize late towards the end of his presidency that his approach hadn't been working. You could point to three pieces of evidence for this in Obama's foreign policy. The fact that he's making this decision to keep 5,000 troops in Afghanistan when he previously had wanted to get all troops out of Afghanistan by the time he left office. You could point to the U.S. sending naval ships near those man-made islands in the South China Sea, kind of saying to China, we do not recognize your territorial claim there. And then the third aspect here is this decision. Now, again, probably the biggest and most glaring kind of warning sign to this, remember, it was just about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, he was going to do it by arming the moderate rebels out there, right?
Right.
We were going to train them, we were going to arm them, and we wouldn't have to fight them because we were going to do this terrific job arming, having to be a good, hard-fighting, moderate, you know, Syrian rebel force that would overtake ISIS. Well, that didn't happen. In fact, I believe the last assessment was they managed to get five guys. And, you know, other groups they'd sent out there surrendered very quickly. They changed sides. They took the money and run. It was probably one of the most abysmal failures. And what's fascinating is that, you know, in that interview with Steve Croft on 60 Minutes, Barack Obama was like, well, I always knew it wasn't going to work. This is why I was a skeptic from the beginning. Okay, Mr. President, but it's your policy, right? If you really don't think it's a good idea, why are you doing this? You know, well, you know, sometimes you got to try new approaches. If this is just a, well, we got to do something in order to look and sound like we're doing something. If this is meant to win a news cycle, this is really not going to improve U.S. national security very much at all. And this looks like window dressing or maybe even a dangerous half measure. You know, if you're going to take the war to ISIS, take the war to ISIS. Don't do this halfway or piecemeal. On the other hand, look, if this does work, wonderful, fantastic. I want to salute the president in circumstances like this, but you just can't get rid of this nagging feeling that this is meant to win a news cycle, and then as soon as he'll, you know, we'll do just enough to say we're doing something, and let's run out the clock on this presidency.
On to the crazy martini now. Jim, and if you can remember all the way back to September, there was a Rolling Stone article that quoted Donald Trump when Carly Fiorina came on the TV as saying, look at that face, and explaining, you know, can you imagine that face being president for the next 4 or 8 years? And he got a lot of grief for it from a lot of different sectors. Carly Fiorina absolutely destroyed him in that second debate on that particular issue. And Trump took a lot of heat from prominent women and some men everywhere, including on The View. So it's very interesting that on Thursday's edition of The View, they decided to make fun and very harshly of Carly Fiorina deciding she needed to smile more in the debates. Here's how that went.
She kicked off her thing saying, you know, people tell me that I didn't smile enough during the last debate. She looked demented. I mean, she did not, her mouth did not downturn one time. She was like,
Halloween mask. I love that.
Smiling Fiorina. Can you imagine?
I mean, demented is a strong word, but it looked like she'd been practicing that for a long time. And she did get some affirmation from Trump.
She means demented. I think as a comic, I have to stand up for the words we use.
So demented and a Halloween mask when Carly Fiorina smiles. Even Brooke Baldwin, a certainly left of center anchor over on CNN, would not stand by and let that go.
Double standard much? First, people jump on Trump for his comments in Rolling Stone about Fiorina's face. He followed up at the debate saying she was beautiful, which, by the way, a lot of ladies didn't like either. Why do we have to talk about her looks? Because she's a woman? All this yapping about women and appearance. And then The View today. All I'm saying is we women can be the worst to one another.
So, Jim, obviously, if anybody had gone publicly on TV and said something about Hillary Clinton's appearance at the debate or the Benghazi hearing, whatever, we wouldn't have heard the end of it. But and we didn't hear the end of it when Trump said it. But he's running for the Republican nomination. Baldwin's right here. Major double standard.
Yeah. I marvel at the kind of the shamelessness of that conversation on The View that we heard. And look, there's two ways of looking at this. One is that, yes, you know, it'd be nice if we were not judged on our appearances. We only have a limited amount of control over this, and it is unfair to not vote for a candidate because they're funny looking. You can say the flip side is, you know, folks like H. Ross Perot had plenty of jokes about their height and stature and Dana Carvey's impression of him and things like this. So you could argue about how much we should be judging candidates on this type of shallow behavior. On the other hand, you could say, oh, this is a human condition. We're visual creatures. We assess people based on appearances, and it's kind of baked in the cake. On the other hand, we definitely should – I don't think we should encourage it. I think this is a particularly lousy way of evaluating a candidate, because by that standard – I mean, if you were just going on looks, would Abraham Lincoln be considered a great president, Greg?
Probably not. Probably never would have got elected.
I mean, you know, insert Taft joke here. but yeah, this is a very shallow way of assessing people. And here you have The View doing this and ripping into her in a way that, I mean, like, you know, are we going to judge Hillary Clinton based on her appearance? Or is that ipso facto sexist and terrible, and you should be cast out of civilized society for doing something like that? So good for the CNN anchor for observing the ridiculous double standard here. Carly Fiore looks fine to me. I don't understand why there's a sudden assessment and obsessive analysis of her looks or her face or her facial expressions or something. Vote for her or don't vote for her. But if you're going to do it based on appearance, do us all a favor and don't vote.
We can't even tell Hillary Clinton to stop shouting without being branded
sexist. There
you go.
Yeah. You know, Greg, you're so sexist. You know, you just want her to be soft-spoken and quiet like that Bernie Sanders fellow.
So two quick housekeeping items before we head out for the weekend. First of all, Jim, a major thank you to you for your Herculean effort to be here for the Three Martini Lunch every day this week, given all the promotional work that you're doing for the book Heavy Lifting. I'm glad to see the book is doing so well, and obviously very grateful that we've been able to have you every day in a very eventful news week. So thank you very much for that, first of all.
Oh, no problem. This is what I'm supposed to do, Greg.
Well, it's good to know that, yeah.
And let's let the listeners think that this has been easy and that you haven't heard me swearing every time we call up. So.
And finally, of course, Saturday is Halloween. My two little girls, one will be going as My Little Pony and the younger one as a ladybug. Jim, what are your guys going as?
If you are in the Authenticity Woods neighborhood of Fairfax, beware of the Galactic Republic's clone troopers. They'll be running around, all that stuff. And I would just point out, so I was ready to surprise and freak them out by going as the bad guy in the new Star Wars movie. But thanks, Amazon, for saying you'll deliver it November 4th. It's okay. I only ordered the beginning of October. That should be enough time there. But that's okay. I can still wear it to the premiere.
There you go. They won't have nightmares till December. Good dad.
There you
good
go.
Dad. All right, Jim, again, great week. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. Happy Halloween, and we'll see you on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.